to this week's episode of In the Shadow of the Evening Trees, episode number 26. I am Jennifer Von Ebers.
I'm David Von Ebers. I don't know what we're doing because we've been all over the place.
We've been podcasting,
visiting, being guests.
Yeah, we are branching out, and we asked to be guests on another podcast, which is nice.
Although we've actually talked about it before. Because it's really the second time we've done
this. That is true.
But in the past, we did it individually. This time we did it together.
Which I think was much better. I mean, it was more enjoyable to do it together so then we can kind of like talk to each other.
Yeah, kind of. We're talking about our friend Jesse Jackson, not the reverend, but the podcaster from Dallas. I thought your thing started to play.
I know.
We're super professional. Our friend Jesse Jackson has a Bruce Springsteen themed podcast called Set Lusting Bruce, and we will add a link to it. But we recorded an episode of his show last night. Last night being the 30th, I guess.
May.
We don't always know when anyone's listening to this, or for that matter, we don't always know exactly when we're going to post it. But we recorded it on the evening of May 30th. I just dropped a pen.
That's okay. And then
that's our sound effects.
Yeah. Once it is published, we will leave a link so you guys can listen to it if you want. Talking about our seeing Bruce Springsteen in Dublin.
Yep. And Ireland in general. That's all we talk about now. It's an all Ireland podcast.
Although, to be honest, last time we did run out of time. And there was not enough time to mention everything. I do want to mention that one of the things that we did, which I thought was fun, is attempting public transportation in another country is always fun. Like, even we got to ride on a double-decker bus, but even figuring out, like, it wasn't really obvious how to pay for it or how much it cost.
We didn't really get a clear answer from our hotel.
A card or anything. We just got a bunch of change from the hotel and got on the bus and was just like, how much is it? And then we had enough. But that was fun. And then we also figured out how to take their train called the DART, which was about a 15-minute walk from our hotel. And thank God for Google Maps, because even walking is super helpful to tell you where to go, which we used a lot.
We got some questionable information at every turn, though.
We did.
Like in the hotel, they couldn't quite tell us what the fare was going to be on the bus. They also gave us, there were two different buses. They gave us the wrong number of one of the two.
Yes.
Which we figured out when this was the bus we took to the concert. We figured it out when we met some people who were also going to the concert. They had the correct information. We had the incorrect information. But fortunately, we got where we were going. And I think the same thing happened with the train. It's a commuter train, you know, and it goes from Dublin to various suburbs and whatnot. And there was confusion over the track. There was a confusion over the times. There was confusion over the fare.
Yes.
So we made our way.
And it is kind of funny when you walk into, I mean, we're from Chicago, so we've taken the train into the city for years, and taken the Metra and things like that, so that doesn't faze us. But when you walk into a train station in another country, and you're just like kind of looking around like, what am I supposed to do? kind of thing. Yeah. It was kind of like, but David was actually figured out how to at least get our train ticket. So that was good.
That was tricky.
And we could have ended up in disaster because we were going to hike in the mountains in Dublin, and we had to take the DART to get there. And when we walked on the platform, there was a train with the doors open. I would have walked in there 100%.
I would have
walked in there to be like,
for sure,
this is our train kind of thing. And luckily the conductor is literally standing with his arm out of the window, so it's not, he's exposed to the air. And I was like, is this going to the place we're going to? And he's like, no. I was like, thank goodness. Because then I was thinking, what if we'd gotten on there and then figured out how do you get off? And it would have just been a disaster.
It would have been a disaster.
It all worked out.
We should talk about the concert.
We should.
We touched on it a little bit last time, but it was kind of the centerpiece of the trip in a way. I mean, that was what got us to make these plans.
And what did we do for weeks before we came to Dublin? We kept on checking the weather, even though it was never going to like be accurate for the day that we're going to be there. But it was just kind of like every day I was just like, what's it like there? You know, kind of thing, hoping that it was going to be pleasant as we were outside.
Yeah, I mean, we knew it was an outdoor concert, so you had to be at least be conscious of the weather. And, you know, I mean, it turns out, and we talked about this last year, that this, you know, going in April and May, you actually have pretty good weather.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you do get some rain, but both of the trips that we made to Ireland in the spring turned out to be pretty good in terms of weather. But you can't really expect it to be dry the whole time. And if you're going to an outdoor concert and you know that it's going to be a long concert and there's going to be some downtime beforehand and downtime afterwards and so forth, you just have to be prepared. I actually have a great, I'll make a plug, and we don't do endorsements.
If they can sponsor us. They sponsored this
Land's
weekend.
End.
Yes.
I have a nice Land's End rain jacket that's got a hood that actually worked really well. Because I think we mentioned the last time that we did actually get caught in the
rain.
Yeah.
The only thing that was great about the whole thing of being outside in the evening and obviously waiting for the concert, it was not cold. So I think it would have been a different experience if we were also chilly and being rained on and stuff like that. But the temperature was amazing.
And, you know, it's interesting. It's probably pretty similar to Chicago this time of year. It's like, you know, high 50s, low 60s most of the time. But the difference is the sun goes down so late in the day in Ireland that it stays warm well into the evening. So we didn't have any issue. And by the so we got to the show around 5:15 or so. We had about an hour's worth of rain, maybe starting from 5:30 to 6:30 or 5:45 to 6:45, something like that. And that was unpleasant. It rained a lot. It rained pretty hard, but we were out there in the rain. And but then it stopped, and so for the rest of the evening, it was, you know, clear skies and
spectacular.
And it, you know, we weren't wet enough to be like cold and miserable.
Yes.
So that was a good thing.
That is a very good thing. But I think the in case we didn't touch on it before, the best part about our tickets is how close we were to the stage.
Yeah, that
we
was
were not
crazy.
Expecting that. We knew we'd be. We didn't have seats around the perimeter of the stadium. Those were taken very quickly. We knew we'd be standing
on the field.
But we kind of pictured like having like 500 people in front of us, you know, kind of thing, and basically just watching it from the jumbo.
500.
Yeah.
Many 5, 000, thousand.
Yeah, 5,
many
000
thousand
people.
Is what
we
pictured.
But I pictured just being watching it kind of like on a jumbotron,
right?
Mostly, and then Bruce and they would be like very tiny.
The stadium that it was in has like two sort of parallel sets of grandstands on either side of the field, and then the other two ends. My recollection is there were no stands at the other two ends. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I don't think there was either.
I mean, it's enclosed, but so the stage was obviously at one end, and we figured we'd be way in the back, but for reasons we're still not clear on.
We just don't know. We were lucky.
We got these wristbands that led us into this pit area that was within the first, you know, 10 to 15 yards of the stage. And we just got in there and camped out. And then it was like, well, we have these, like, we're in a prime location. We're not going to leave no matter what.
And we didn't.
Yeah. Come hell or high water, we were going to stay in that spot. And because we knew, too, that, you know, obviously, there, you know, more and more people would come into the area. They'd get more and more crowded. And also, we figured that when the concert actually began, people would, you know, kind of move forward towards the stage. And we're like, well, you know, we don't want people getting, you know, there are obviously a lot of people in front of us, but we didn't want even more people in front of us.
Yes.
We're not the tallest people in the world.
That we're, vertically challenged.
So it was also important to, you know, try to get a decent vantage point. And that's the, you know, it's a kind of a dilemma because you want to be up close, but if you're up close and there's tall people in front of you, you really don't see much of anything other than the screens.
Yeah.
If you're further back, you may have more of a chance. But in any event, it was a great spot, and we were not going to give up that spot.
It's by far, out of all the concerts I've been to, the closest I've ever been to a major concert ever. We saw the Rolling Stones in Soldier's Field.
But we were way up in the grandstands, so far away.
It was a great concert, but it was fun. Same thing. It was like Jumbotron listening or watching.
Yeah. The only thing, the thing about Soldier Field is that really, of course, they've renovated it over the years too. That was in 1997. And frankly, I don't think I've been in the stadium since 97 when we saw the Stones. But on that, you know, at that time, there were really no obstructed vision, you know, view seats. So we were pretty high up, but you had a very good view of the stage and everything like that. But, you know, and the sound was great. You heard every little thing.
You sure did.
But it wasn't like this. We were super close.
And I kind of think we also had a better experience than the people that were in seats because we were so much closer than they were.
Oh, yeah, I think
so,
for sure.
They were kind of like on the side. We were in the front, right. You know, kind of thing. So we had a straight on view. So for those people, they probably thought, oh, this is great. I can sit the whole thing. But it's like we actually got a better experience, I think.
I think we did. I mean, you know, the trade off, of course, is you had to stand. And you had to stand for a long time. Like I said, we were probably within physically inside the stadium by about 5:30 because we got there. It took a little while to get through the gate. We went to the bathroom before going to the stadium, the actual, you know, seating part of the stadium. Because there was kind of like a food court on the outside after you went through the gate, but before you got into the actual stadium, there was kind of a food court. And that was the thing is like, you know, we could have gotten something to eat, but we were like, well, we want to see what our seats are going to be like first. And then once we're in there, we're not moving.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere. So we didn't. So that was, plus it would have been, we already had talked about this before. If one of us had to leave to use the bathroom, we would have gone together.
Yeah, because, we really would have had to.
There's no way that in the dark I would have been able to find you or you find me kind of thing.
Yeah,
so,
because once you're in that area, there's not like any kind of landmark.
No.
Like when we saw the Mavericks a few weeks ago, you know, we were in an inside arena, and boy, the people around us kept getting up and leaving and coming back.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it was very easy for them to find their way back.
And do you remember the girl who was like, she was trying to find her people, and she had a hot dog with all the fixings on it in her hand.
No, you're talking about Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, now I'm talking about Bruce Springsteen. Yes. With all the fixings on it, a beer in another hand, trying to call her friends. And like looking around, and the woman who was standing next to me, she's like, "Your friends aren't here. Just keep moving on."
At one point, I think it was a different person because I think it was a guy. There was a guy kind of doing a similar thing, and she actually sort of his back was to us, and she actually sort of grabbed him by the each shoulder of his jacket, and not like, you know, like not aggressively, but kind of just moved him out of their way. They were standing to our right, and this guy was kind of coming across from our left to the right, and she just kind of guided him out of the way.
Keep moving.
Yeah. She was a no-nonsense Irish lady who was, she wasn't mean or anything like that.
Protecting the group.
But yeah, it was pretty funny. But so let's talk about the actual show.
Yes.
Because I had hinted at it kind of when we were talking last week toward the end about how there had been some controversy about the set list and what he did it in play and the fact that he didn't vary it too much. And so we actually had an opportunity to talk about this with our friend Jesse last night. And Jesse went to three different shows in Texas earlier, you know, in the first leg of the tour. I think he said he saw him in Houston, in Dallas, and in Austin. And Jesse is from Dallas or the Dallas area. I don't know if he lives in the city, but whatever. And so, you know, he said the shows were very, very similar, but he was not complaining about it. Other people, I guess, were a little unhappy with the way they didn't mix it up too much. But see, you know, I keep thinking from my perspective is like, you know, I mean, Jesse, a good part of his living is he's a blogger and one of the main things he covers is Springsteen. So I can understand why someone with that particular interest would go to multiple shows, but it seems like the average person is not doing that, right?
Correct.
So to me, I'm like, well, why would I care if he played, you know, he was in Dublin on May 5th, 7th, and 9th. We were there on the 9th. Why would I care if he played the same songs on the 5th that he played on the 9th?
Absolutely. And why would I, if he was in Paris the next week, why would I care if he played the same songs?
Well, and the funny thing, too, is, and I might have mentioned this, we talked about it last night a bit with Jesse, but so he opened with a song that's not on any one of his albums except the live album from 2000, Live in New York City, a song called My Love Will Not Let You Down. And it was not a song that, you know, even the hardcore fans were particularly familiar with when he started playing it in during the 2000 tour. But I like it because when I saw him the last time in St. Louis in April of 2000, that was the song he opened with. So I thought it was kind of cool that he opened with the same song in Ireland. And apparently that's not what he had done during the U.S. leg. Apparently they had opened up with No Surrender, which I think was the third song they played when we saw.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they opened with... He opened with My Love Will Not Let You Down, and then they did Death to My Hometown, which is off the Wrecking Ball album, and then No Surrender. And I got to be honest, I did not keep... during the concert, I was keeping pretty close track to what they were playing and when they were playing it. But, you know, I couldn't rattle off. It was about 29 or 30 songs in total. And you got to understand, when Bruce plays 29 or 30 songs, you know, some of the versions of those songs are 10 or 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
You know, because he does not play stuff the way it is on the record. It's just he's never done that. I mean, it'll sound very familiar to you if you're familiar with his music, but he does unique, different versions of the songs for the most part. The only song that he pretty much stays true to is Born to Run, I would say, which is kind of, you know, that's a song where when they recorded it way back in the 70s, they put just an enormous amount of time into sort of perfecting the sound in the studio. So I think they try to remain fairly, not note for note, and they do draw it out longer than it is on the record, but it's pretty accurate, you know, pretty faithful to the studio version of the song when they play it live. And I've seen him, every time I've seen him, he's played it. So that was 81, 84, 2000, and 2023, and it's always pretty accurate.
And I thought, going into it, since the first time I've seen Bruce in, I've of course seen video or concerts of him performing and everything, and how he just goes all out, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. And I was expecting that, but also like thinking, like at this stage of his life, maybe it's just a little bit, you know, no, it's all out and
forward.
Just in the intensity and just the amazingness of them performing at that level for 3.5 hours is just insane.
And one of the things about them, and we've talked about this, you know, with the Mavericks too, is, you know, when bands are as skilled as they are as musicians, and they've been playing together for so long, I mean, it really does kind of give them a certain freedom to just go crazy in a way, you know, and it's like this sort of controlled mayhem that you can't get from an album. I love listening to the records. I like his studio album. My goodness, we have not been drinking, even though I'm slurring my speech. I like listening to the studio records, but there's just a different energy when he plays it live. And, you know, he's always done little things. Now, here's one thing. If I had a sort of a critique, maybe, it's that while he played certain fan favorites, one of the things that he always has done in the past was, you know, there are certain things that are like, you know, little gems that he throws in for the diehard fans, the people who've seen him a million times. There's a song called Held Up Without a Gun that is, you know, there is a studio version of it on one of his collections, the Essential Bruce Springsteen or something like that. But it's not a song that was on any one of his albums. But the diehard fans knew, you know, Held Up Without a Gun. There's another song called Paradise by the Sea, the letter C, not S-E-A, Paradise by the Sea. And you know, that's on some of his live recordings, but again, it's not anything that was on a studio album. You know, in the old days, he would do just like a fantastic cover of Gary Bond's Quarter to Three, and that was almost like his signature song in the early days. Jesse mentioned, and I was kind of surprised to hear this, at one of the Texas shows, he did the Detroit medley, the Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels song, C.C. Ryder, Devil with a Blue Dress, I can't remember the third song. And, you know, that again goes way, way back to the early days. I believe he did that as an encore when I saw him in 1981, but I didn't even know that he did that any longer. So he didn't, you know, in the Ireland shows, he didn't really do those kind of like little things that the old timers might have expected. But, you know, on the other hand, the thing is, he keeps making music. So there's more and more and more stuff
exactly
for him to play. And he did play some stuff off of some of the more... he didn't play anything off of Western Stars. But he did play a few songs off of Letter to You, which was the last band he did, a record he did with the full band. He did do one song off the Soul album. He did Night Shift, which was really cool because it gave the backup singers, he could really feature the backup singers, including this guy Curtis King, who's been
amazing.
Yeah, and Curtis is, and the women who are in that little group, they've been with Bruce for years, so they're, you know, they're essentially part of the band.
Yes.
But it's nice that he kind of got to step out and was really featured on that song. And he played some songs off of Wrecking Ball and stuff like that. So, you know, there's more music for him to play now. And so certain things are going to drop off. He didn't play anything from the first album, which, you know, I was fine with that. I happen to love that first album, Greetings from Asbury Park. He played a couple of songs from The Wild, The Innocent, and The East Street Shuffle. He played The East Street Shuffle and he played Kitty's Back. We had a whole conversation with that with Jesse last night because that's always been one of my favorite Springsteen songs. But apparently Jesse was not a huge fan until recently.
Well, and I kind of think like he could have had any variety of a set list. There's out of the millions of people that see him, somebody's going to complain about like what the lineup is. So, and what Jesse had mentioned that Steve Van Zandt said, the set list was telling a story, you know, kind of thing. So it was on purpose and it was with thought and taking you through a journey.
And just one other thought I had about, you know, so when the Soul record came out, I downloaded it, you know, because it's Bruce and I like his music generally and I was curious about it. But, you know, there's always a little bit of concern that, by the way, the album is called Only the Strong Survive. Which is an album of all Soul covers that Bruce recorded. And the song that he did was called The Night Shift, which was sort of the first single off of that record, of the Springsteen record. You know, there's always a little bit of a concern when a white artist is playing music like that. It's kind of, you know, there's a sense of, is it appropriation? But I listened to a really cool Questlove podcast about this. And he and all the people on his show, you know, they interviewed Bruce, and they were really enthusiastic about it. Okay, so first of all, if Questlove likes the record, then that's pretty good in my book. But also, one of the women on his show, and I'm blanking on her name, but you know, one of the things she pointed out is when a big name act records those songs, the writers get royalties from it. You know, so you're benefiting these folks. And it's not like, you know, someone like Elvis, who may have been taking attention away from these black artists. It's many, many, many decades after these songs came out, Bruce Springsteen records them. And that helps the artists to the extent they're still alive or their families or whoever owns the royalties. So there is, you know, there is a positive thing about that. But anyway, I really liked the show. I thought it will probably always be my sentimental favorite, in part because it was the first show you ever saw.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, we walked out of there and I go, so, that's Bruce Springsteen. But also because it was in Ireland, and because I, you know, as we were talking about before, it's like, who knows, you know, whether there'll be other tours, whether we'll have an opportunity. So it was kind of a once in a lifetime thing.
For sure. And we somehow pulled it off.
We did. We did, which was amazing. The other thing, I don't want to take over, but the other thing I think we should talk about is where we stayed in Dublin this time compared to last time. So the last episode we talked a lot about Sligo.
Yes.
But we stayed in a different part of the city this time compared to a year ago.
Yes. And we when we stayed there last year, we stayed at this townhouse called The Wilder.
Such a great place.
Pretty residential area, very quiet, very walkable to any place that we needed to go. So that was good. This place that we went to, very lively, and just tons of people walking around all the time, right. Kind of thing. Kind of like it reminded us a little bit, kind of like of Times Square.
Right. Actually, you know, that is true because there were times when it was very, very crowded like Times Square.
Yeah.
But to me, the thing that I kept thinking of is it reminded me a bit of Michigan Avenue in Chicago in that, you know, there are a lot of retail, a lot of stores, a lot of restaurants, some hotels like the hotel we stayed in. And, you know, off of the so we're staying on O'Connell Street or is because it was north of the river, they refer to it as O'Connell Street Upper. Now, I got to tell you, I do not understand Irish and the English and the Scottish do their streets.
Yeah, you wasn't sure what the upper meant.
Upper, I think, just meant north of the river.
Right.
Which I guess
makes sense.
So the River Liffey runs roughly west to east through the city towards the port of Dublin and the sea. And it kind of divides, I don't know how, I wouldn't say it necessarily divides the city in half, but it kind of divides the city center in half.
Yes.
So south of the river, there are a lot of government buildings, a lot of museums. There's an area called Grafton Street, which isn't just the street. It's the whole area around the street that's got a lot. It's
bars
a little,
and restaurants.
It's bars and restaurants. And it's a little hipper and a little younger, would say.
Yes, definitely.
There's also, and let's be honest, it's a little bit touristy.
Yes.
There's an area called the Temple Bar, named after the Temple Bar, apparently, because there's an actual bar called the Temple Bar. And there's an area called the Temple Bar. Again, I don't quite get how they do place names in England and Ireland and Scotland and whatnot.
St. Stephen's Green.
St. Stephen's Green is
gorgeous
a big
park.
Yeah, a beautiful park. You know, obviously a lot smaller than like Central Park, but still a big, good-sized city park.
But we like to, when we get to a place, when we start walking around, is just spend time walking around in every direction just to see what's around the neighborhood kind of thing. Which is nice.
I do think that, you know, so north of the river where we were this time is, you know, it's a little older. I mean, the whole city is old, let's be honest. It might be a little more touristy than south of the river. There aren't the same, I would say, there aren't the same kind of cultural institutions in the sort of capital C, capital I cultural institutions north of the river. There aren't the big... a lot of the museums and again the government buildings and so forth, but there are you know, in a more vernacular sense, cultural institutions in that there are bars that have been around for hundreds of years, and you know, so it's a neat mix.
The James Joyce Center was within a couple blocks from our hotel.
Yeah,
so that was close. The Remembrance area.
Yeah, the Garden of Remembrance. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
There are a lot of, I mean, and you know, it's this way in America too when you think about it. But there are a lot of, you know, statues and memorials and different kinds of public remembrances, if that's a word, of the revolution that led to the establishment of the modern Irish Republic, which began in 1816. They finally signed a peace agreement with the British in 1916. They signed a peace agreement in 2021 that took effect in December of 2022. So we are just past the 100th anniversary of the modern Republic of Ireland, which is fascinating. And so there's this really interesting, you know, Garden of Remembrance, where there's a kind of a cross-shaped reflecting pool, sort of like the, you know, on the National Mall in Washington. And there are sculptures and there are inscriptions and things like that. And it's very interesting. You know, listen, I don't want to get into all of like the politics of it, but it is fascinating. And I think we talked about this last year. You know, Chicago and the suburbs of Chicago have very large Irish American populations. And when I was, you know, just old enough to go to the bars legally, a lot of the places that I would go to, including the bar where we met,
yes,
you know, you'd see like pro-IRA graffiti in the men's rooms and stuff like that. My brother was in a band, and they played at some party at a bar one time on the south side of Chicago, and they thought it was just a regular party, and it turns out it was a fundraiser for an organization called NORAD that sent money to the IRA. We're not talking about your individual retirement account
yes.
here. We're talking about the National Liberation Movement, you might call it, in Ulster. Anyway, I don't want to get into all that. But it is kind of fascinating to see the country for real instead of through the eyes of Americans who may or may not really have understood what was going on there.
Yes.
You know? But there are these, you know, remembrances and memorials and statues and things like that harken back to that. Just like we have, you know, stuff, you know, we celebrate the 4th of July and that sort of thing. It's a very similar thing in Ireland. But it's also a more, you know, it's a more somber thing because obviously, you know, a lot of people died in the
right.
uprising and so forth. And, you know, so it's, I think it's good to see the more kind of solemn remembrance of that instead of like the in the olden days, kind of the drunk American, you know, cheering on of the IRA. I think it's what we saw, you know, it was a little bit more representative of where the country is now. Anyway, I rambled on.
I did want to talk about a bar that we had gone to have dinner. They had served dinner. It was, I can't remember the name of it, Murray's. That we,
yeah.
On the outside, they had like a outdoor patio kind of thing. It didn't look that great from the outside, but we just thought, okay, let's just go and see if it was a Thursday night.
It was a Thursday night,
right. Well, we thought we'll just go inside. And once we walked in, it was beautifully decorated. It was packed.
Much bigger than
it
we expected.
It was way bigger than we expected. And so we were just, and the person in front of us was making reservations for the next night. And we're like, oh, shoot, we don't have a reservation. We're not going to be able to come. The guy was kind of jokey a little bit, the maitre d', and he was just like, you don't have a reservation, you know? And
I said, yeah, we're dumb. No, we're lazy Americans. And I think that appealed to him. He liked the self-deprecating.
So he's like, well, I have a table for you. You know, is it okay if it's like a high top or like, that's fine. And then when he sat us, he said, I'm sorry, you won't be able to see the music from here. And we're like, didn't even know there was music. And
yeah.
Sure enough, like within maybe 15 minutes, it was two gentlemen, Irish singing that went on. And then, which turned into Irish dancers
later on, which came out.
We were on our way out and they said the Irish dancers are going to start in a few minutes. And I'm like, we're staying.
Yeah.
So they had three people who did Irish dancing, which was amazing. They had that every night. And it was just kind of like by accident that we ran into the, you know, we were able to eat there and then have like a show
and I learned,
on top of it.
I learned something new too. So the singer was, you know, he would introduce the different songs and they played a few different Pogue songs.
Yes,
one
he
of
did.
My, favorite one of my favorite bands, but especially of among Irish bands, one of my favorites. But I learned something new. The song Dirty Old Town, which was I don't know if the Pogues ever had anything you'd call a hit in the United States, but it was, if you're a Pogues fan, it's a fairly well-known song. I did not realize that they didn't write that song. It's a traditional Irish folk song.
He actually said
who wrote it, but the Pogues did a famous version of it. And I have to plug my other dumb podcast, my Clash podcast, because Joe Strummer played with the Pogues on and off for several years. when he was kind of between gigs, you might say.
We'll leave a link to the David's other podcast.
And I did talk a lot about the Ireland trip on my show last time, including Joe Strummer's connection to the Pogues and to Ireland and his support of the Irish Republican cause. I also talked quite a bit about this really interesting documentary we saw. Did we mention this last time? I don't think we did.
I don't think we did.
We saw a documentary that David Letterman put together. Well, I don't know who put it together, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's on Disney Plus. It's called A Sort of Homecoming. And it's basically David Letterman interviewing Bono and the Edge from U2 and talking about their music. And then they play some songs at the end. And what I thought was really interesting, whether you like that band or not, documentary really kind of put them in context and showed sort of their place in the evolution of Irish culture from a darker time. You know, we mentioned James Joyce, maybe a darker time in the past, to a more modern time where young people wanted to put aside, you know, sectarian animosities and so forth. And although they weren't obviously the only people, and they're certainly not solely responsible for where Ireland kind of progressed to, it is a very different country today.
Absolutely.
Than it was, like I say, when we were seeing the pro-IRA graffiti in the bars around Chicago and, you know, and the troubles and all that. It is just a very different country. And I thought it was really interesting to see kind of that evolution and to see a bit of it firsthand.
Yeah. And I also like the how they talked about the history of their music and changing lyrics for some songs that make it, you know, that have changed the way they view things now and things like that. So if you get a chance to watch that documentary, highly recommend. 10 out of 10.
Yeah. And of course, we also found out that we were staying at the hotel right across the street from the venue where they played a few songs. They had a little concert. And not only was the venue right across the street from where we were staying, but it turns out that venue was a part of a maternity hospital that was converted into a theater. And the very room where they held the concert was the room where both Bono and the Edge were born. They were like actually delivered in that hospital in that room.
Yeah.
And then they came back and played a concert. And we didn't know that. We walked out the front door of our hotel and
the next day,
wait a minute,
that's what we just saw on TV. So that was very cool.
Yeah.
We got pictures of it.
So we ran a little long.
We did. We could have talked for another hour.
We could have. We it's possible we might touch on some more things next time.
We will.
But it won't be a whole episode. Well,
yeah.
Maybe it will.
You just never know. But thanks for listening. And you can listen to this wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Thanks very much.
See you next time.